The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good afternoon.
Check, check, check. Mic check.
We're not even hurrying.
Oh, we're not.
Our computers are up.
That's
our
right.
Guest is on the line.
That's right. I'm not even breathing heavy.
We're going to have to pretend to make an emergency just so we can, sound like we usually do.
I smell smoke.
In the game. I'm not even going to comment.
Okay.
So you've joined We the People, and wethepeopleradio.us is where you can find all of our information. We air live on Sundays from noon to 2 on the West Coast. Here at KCNR 1460 AM, we have a chat room open during that time. So if you ever want to join us then, we'd be happy to have you. If you live on the East Coast, you can find us on WNJC on the Conservative Commandos Radio Network, Mondays from 2 to 3. So at this point, we're airing an hour again because they found another show that's going to be there from 1 to 2, which is awesome, 5 days a week. So anyway, if you want to hear the second half of the show and you live on the East Coast, just jump online, wethepeopleradio.us, and the other half is always posted. So let's see. The other thing, too, Conservative Commandos has put a phone number together that you can listen to their entire lineup of programming on the phone. So maybe you don't have good computer connection and it's hard for you to stream live audio, but you have free minutes on your landline or, I don't know, typically, if you don't have good internet connection, you don't have good cell service, but hey, things happen. You can find that on the front page of our website. The phone number is 832-999-1199. And again, it's at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
That's the end of the commercial.
There we are.
So I better do it because I always forget. And if you want to sponsor the program or send us ideas for guests or comment or whatever, our emails and phone numbers and all that good stuff are right there on the front page.
Did you want to mention Tuesday?
Tuesday, this Tuesday, the 12th, up in Yreka, if you happen to live on the West Coast, we are having a mock signing of the we're not taking the Klamath Dams out document. Kind of a countermeasure against the
government. It is every bit as important as their document.
Exactly. Every bit as valid, too.
That's right. Holds just as much weight.
Governor Brown of Oregon, Governor Brown of California, that whole if it's brown, flush it, do it twice.
So nice we flushed it twice.
Those two knuckleheads.
Yeah, too bad we didn't flush it the second time.
And let's see, who else was there? A bunch of other goofballs, but you had the Department of the Interior and you had Pacific Corp. So the document we've been reporting to you about the last couple of months where they've been meeting in secret with all these stakeholders and all this stuff, well, Congressman LaMalfa's office busted them meeting in secret and was looking to take apart their little joyride. So they decided, well, we'll get rid of all the stakeholders and just the four of us will get together and we'll have a big ceremony and we're going to sign it. So they've decided they're taking out the dams. Well, that's real nice, but it's not a done deal. So despite what you have seen, perhaps on the news or read in the paper, definitely not a done deal. So just as a morale booster and, kind of as a way to make fun of those guys, we thought we'd make up our own document that says, yeah, we're not doing any of that.
You're not afraid of really upsetting them and making them angry?
Yeah, probably not. I do like mocking, though. Mocking is my favorite.
But when they get angry, that's when they really launch into some really
stupid
moves.
I know, because they usually melt down.
Yes.
So we'll be on the courthouse steps in Yreka at 1 o'clock on Tuesday if you happen to be up in that area. And if not, watch for us on Facebook and whatnot, because it's really just a photo op and just a way to get people together and, not feel bummed out about the whole thing. So we'll post it on the website here, and you won't miss anything. I'm sure we'll do a program on the updates of where this thing goes from here because it's far from over. So let's see. After all that, I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Bob provides all of our music, touches all the buttons. Bill and I are not allowed to do
that. We are not allowed to touch the buttons. In fact, there is a sign in here somewhere that says, do not touch this button.
That's true.
Yeah.
All righty. And we have our guest with us already this morning. His name is Patrick Wood. He has been with us before, and I really do hope that you check out the archives. I've kind of forgot to post the previous shows. My bad. I will go back and do that, get those dates on there for you so you can link to them. He he has a book out called Technocracy Rising, and I'll let him promote it because he's the author, obviously. But he has done a huge amount of work. So for all those of you who follow, like, the Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, all those things, if you really get behind all of that and you look at the root of it, it's technocracy.
Exactly.
I thought you were going to say some things. So I'm looking at you. Nothing's coming out. Patrick, would you like to give people a little intro on yourself, please?
Sure.
Since I know I have too much information here.
Just when you thought it was safe to get back in the water.
That's right. They're coming for you.
Forget it.
This is something we cannot dismiss with a mock signing, however.
Oh, I know.
Although we'd like
to. It makes you want to go rent a fleet of Caterpillar tractors, you know, like some of the D6s or something, and get about 1,000 people and handcuff yourself to the tractors and throw the keys away or swallow them, you know.
I know.
That'll be a protest, and I'll protest.
Yeah.
Yes, I am. My name is Patrick Wood. we're starting this off in a kind of a strange way today.
It's okay. We like strange.
But I have been studying globalization and the globalization process for over 40 years. I started in the 1970s, at which time I was partnered with the late Anthony C. Sutton. I authored Trilaterals Over Washington with him, co-authored back in those days, and it was a definitive analysis of the elite group, the Trilateral Commission. And in recent years, as the research has continued, I discovered historic technocracy. This was after Professor Sutton had passed, and historic technocracy blew my mind away because I realized after I studied a little bit that this was, in fact, the new international economic order that the Trilateral Commission was attempting to implement on a global basis. And I say, why would I do that? Well, I had a background in economics for one. So does Professor Sutton. He had actually taught economics at, I think it was University of Southern California, excuse me. And he was also a research fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford, a very accomplished economist. And my undergrad studies were in economics, and I was in the financial industry, so I had a pretty strong interest in economic theory. And when I set my eyes on technocracy and learned that it was a replacement economic system for capitalism and free enterprise, that got my attention. I'd never heard of such a thing. I never knew anybody ever gave 2 minutes to thinking of such a thing. A replacement economic system for capitalism and free enterprise. But that's what it was. Scientists and engineers did this in the 1970s, or excuse me, the 1930s. And they were associated at the time with Columbia University, which is, you know, that was the center of the world back in those days. And I guess they had a little bit of an ego issue in a way, because they thought that they could just pretty much dismiss Congress altogether.
Gosh, that's real popular again.
Well, they were hoping to, they were encouraging Roosevelt just to declare himself dictator so he could implement technocracy. And he didn't take it. Roosevelt didn't take him up on it. We can be thankful for that. We only got the New Deal instead. And if you understand tech, the more you understand technocracy, the more you understand how blessed we were to get the New Deal instead of technocracy. Because it would have, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what would have happened had Roosevelt done that in those days. We'd all be, you know, wearing jackboots, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah, if we think the surveillance state is upon us now, they would have, we would have never noticed it coming. They would have had a policeman in every house.
Yeah, that's about it. So anyway, that's my background, and I've studied, continued to study technocracy and its implementation around the world. We find the Trilateral Commission is interwoven with the technocracy meme. We see it manifested on the global stage through sustainable development. The United Nations also calls it the green economy. We see it surrounding the concepts of global warming. It's all over the United Nations. And somebody asked, well, how did it get the United Nations? The Trilateral Commission. the Trilateral Commission fed this whole thing to the United Nations back in 1992 at the Rio de Janeiro conference, where Agenda 21 was first conceived. And that's also where the term sustainable development became popularized. And all of that, all of the 1992 meeting, was thanks to an earlier work that was done through the auspices of the United Nations, through the so-called Brundtland Report that was concluded in 1987 with the production and publication of a book called Our Common Future. Gro Harlem Brundtland was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And so we can pretty directly conclude that Brundtland was the connection between Trilateral Commission policy, wannabe policy maybe at that point, but their policies, and giving it off, passing it off, if you will, to the United Nations to implement on a global basis. And here we are today. And you've mentioned some of those things in passing when you first started Agenda 21 and 2030 Agenda, Green Economy, United Nations, Trilateral Commission. People at first think, oh, what a hodgepodge, what a bunch of junk, you know, all these things thrown together, it can't possibly be related. Oh, yes, they can, and yes, they are. And
well, they also think that they're meaningless. There's a segment of our population, even folks that would agree with us, that would not be on board with those ideas. They think, oh, it's just a United Nations thing. They have no teeth. It'll never, you know, it's not doing anything. And I think the part they don't understand is that you don't necessarily have to pass it in law form in order to make it real. If you can, especially if you can get everybody to emotionally buy in.
Right.
Which kind of, you know, one of the things we'll be talking about today is this this article. That was what made me get a hold of you in the first place. Let's see. Another climate alarmist admits the real motive behind the global warming scare. Imagine that. There's a different – it's not really about global warming.
What?
Not
a, are you kidding?
Have they been misleading us?
No. They wouldn't just pretend that kind of stuff to try to throw a net over everybody.
What the heck is it about then? I'm so confused.
I'm going to knock Bill out during the break, sorry, just in case anybody wanted to know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There will be co-host abuse.
Yeah. You know, all joking aside, the
oh no.
I know, it's just you have to laugh or you cry.
I know.
And it's not
frustrating.
And it's not nice to cry on the radio, you know. It gives a bad word picture out there. Oh no, the hosts are crying again.
They're crying again. Darn them.
It wouldn't work.
Stupid cheerleaders anyway.
What's the matter with them?
So better to laugh than to cry, but believe me, we're crying on the inside, folks. It's just, you know, the humorous demeanor is just an act. But, you know, seriously, this whole picture of what the United Nations is doing in the world right now, while everybody is kind of looking at some of the details of this stuff, and they're fighting over Obama, they're fighting over Clinton, they're fighting over Cruz and Trump and whatever, you know, everybody's all worked up over something these days. While all that's going on, there's a heist in process. In progress, and nobody sees the heisters. They don't see what's going on a global basis. It's kind of like a movie. You know, there's a lot of action movies, especially, are famous for this. The detectives will be huddled in a squad room somewhere trying to figure out, you know, what kind of crime scene is going on. And, you know, they're shuffling pictures around on a whiteboard and, you know, oh, yeah, you found this about this guy and that about that guy. And they're stumbling around in the dark trying to put the plot together. And they don't get it. And all of a sudden, some guy, you know, you see the light bulb go on, right? The eyebrow goes up, doink, and all of a sudden somebody proclaims something like, oh, my gosh, they're going to heist the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they always have this brainstorm at the last minute while the other guys are unpacking their gear, getting ready to drill through the wall.
That's right. You know, they're going to blow a hole in the floor. They're going to somehow get in. They're going to take all the gold. They're going to take all the money. And they realize that they're sitting on top of the biggest heist in history. Right? They didn't know that 5 minutes before, but all of a sudden something connects a dot and they go click. Oh my gosh, they're down there right now, unpacking their bags and their explosives.
Yeah, everything we were looking at was actually a smoke screen. Yeah, to derail us. And
that's right, a smoke screen.
And that's very much what we have going on now, I think. And this latest little bit about the global warming, the real motives behind global warming for those people who are still clinging to it as reality. I think it's important to get that out there because it might blow a hole in somebody's paradigm and get them to stop marching along with it, even though it might be unwittingly. We need to take a really swift break, and we'll be back with our guest, Patrick Wood. Do join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We have all the connection to his book, Technocracy Rising. It's really a fast read. It'll make sense of a lot of things for you, and I do hope that you order it. This is We the People Radio. Be right back. I'm sure there will be other fun songs, but that's a good one for today. Oh, welcome back.
I got a dam I can sell you.
Exactly. Cheap. Four of them.
Cheap.
We're here with Patrick Wood. We are chatting about technocracy and the things that make it...
That's what you should do. You should sell the dams.
That's what we ought to do.
Yeah.
Just have a signing.
Have an auction.
Little fake deeds, right? Yeah, everybody can buy a piece of the dam. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know what? That's
comes with a power plant.
Exactly. Comes with free hydropower. Huh, imagine that.
Can I buy it on an installment plan?
Exactly. Actually, credit. We prefer credit.
No, cash only.
No, not credit.
We extend his debt limit.
We want it on the, what are those stupid bonds? Okay, it'll come.
The internet money.
No.
What's it called? No.
Oh, Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. There you go.
We only take
Bitcoin.
Lunacy. So,
here's what the United Nations official said about climate change. What is it really about?
Yeah.
What's it about, Alfie? And he said, this is Otmar Edenhofer. That's a mouthful. I think he's German, probably.
You think?
Good old Otmar.
Otmar, I don't know, Edenhofer, but he is an official with the United Nations. He was a top climate official. And he said, this is a direct quote from his lips. He said, one has to free oneself from the illusion that international climate policy is environmental policy, period. This has almost nothing to do with the environment policy anymore, with problems such as deforestation or the ozone hole. So, what is the goal, he was asked, of environmental policy?
He said, quote,
we distribute de facto the world's wealth by climate policy, period, close quote.
Wow.
Huh. Who would have ever thought? Redistribution of wealth. What a clever idea.
That's pretty stunning. And somebody's going
to
say, well,
to
that's just one guy, and maybe he had a hangover or something and he didn't, he misspoke or something. Somebody's going to say that. They are. Because one person, you got to confirm everything with two or three witnesses, right? That's even what the Bible says to do. So, okay, fine. Let's take Christiana Figueres, who is the head of climate change right now at the United Nations. She is numero uno. Feminine? I don't know. Anyway, she's the head
She's numero uno.
Yeah.
Numero uno.
That's what she said last year in a press conference. And She said, this is a direct quote from her lips, this is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution, period, close quote.
Hmm.
How about that?
Yeah, yeah. And I tell you, I always get a little bit nervous when a German speaks up like that. And I don't know, we should never underestimate the Germans.
They're making a comeback right now. They really are. They're on a roll, and they're making a comeback on the global stage. And mm-hmm. people like Edenhofer are out there saying stuff like this. It's like, okay.
Well, I don't know. Maybe with their recent immigration debacle, maybe they'll step back from this as well, because we all know how that ended and what's going on over there with.
Well, the bad part is you have so many people out there who are absolutely hook, line, and sinker sold on the idea that humans are causing, you know, some climate disruption or whatever, and that we do have to deindustrialize in order to fix it.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the immigration issue there, because Europe looks a lot like our southern border.
Yes.
Wide open. And, you know, people are still scratching our heads. How can after three different administrations, how come our border is still open? Even when Congress has mandated that a wall be built in certain areas, it's still not built. Even though they funded money for it, it's still not built.
Hmm. Well, that whole European thing is I mean, just a classic in-your-face example of what's going to happen when they just open it up.
Well,
you have to have
it
controls.
Is, but here's where the policy came from. This is part of sustainable development. You say, what's the connection between sustainable development and the migration crisis in Europe? I wrote an article, when was it? April 5. That was 5 to 6 days ago, called, and I titled it, Sustainable Development, Migration, and the Multicultural Destruction of the Nation State. And the point of the article is to expose a man by the name of Peter Sutherland, who is the honorary chairman of the Trilateral Commission in Europe, number one. He was the chairman of BP, British Petroleum. He was managing director of Goldman Sachs International for a number of years. He was the first World Trade Organization president.
Holy cow, this guy's connected.
Yeah, the guy's connected. Yeah, okay, let's just leave it at that. He's connected. But here's what he's been doing since 2006, when he became the special representative of the Secretary General for International Migration. That's his title. That's his business.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
I didn't know there was either.
Well, yeah, there he is, the special representative of the Secretary General for International Migration.
You say Secretary
and since
General.
Since 2006, he's been stomping around Europe, forcing the borders open, getting immigration quotas set and everything. This is before the crisis hit. And he's been out telling everybody that the answer to everything is we have to achieve a multicultural society so that sustainable development can work. And he has said on numerous occasions, the sustainable development cannot work without a multicultural society. He said that.
Now, you said Secretary General.
That is crazy talk.
Is that UN?
That's the UN.
Yeah.
And he's representing the UN here, but he's also representing the Trilateral Commission, okay? This is where technocracy comes from. And he's not just a rank-and-file Trilateral Commission guy. There's only about 350 members anyway on a global basis. But he's the honorary chairman of the European contingent of the Trilateral Commission. He's a mucky-muck. And any way you look at it, the guy's at the top of the pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, guys, sustainable development ain't going to fly unless we can have a multicultural society. So open up your borders. And that's what they did. They opened up their borders, right? And then all of a sudden, the floodgates open down south of them in the Mideast, and boom, up they come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they now tear, look what's happening. They literally are tearing Europe apart. And people are saying, wow, that was a turn of bad luck. But folks, this wasn't bad luck. This was official policy that these sustainable development nutcakes are trying to impose on this people in Europe. And what was even more astounding is that the United Nations, remember the Paris attack?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When, oh, yeah, Debbie Bacigalupi went over there. I said, man, stay home for Pete's sake. You know, don't go over there and get blown up. But she went over there anyway afterwards. She didn't get blown up. She came back. But the day or two after the Paris attacks, which just shook Europe to its core, that was like 9/11 to them, to them. And the next couple of days, the United Nations comes out and they scold Europe. They scold the European nations, saying, you better not backtrack on your pledges made to host migrants. Let me read you the quote coming out. This is an article that was published. It just blew my mind. This is a quote. The United Nations on Tuesday urged states not to backtrack on pledges made to host migrants and refugees, including from Syria, in the wake of the attacks in Paris. Multiple UN agencies issued a warning. Now it means a full court press. Multiple agencies issued a warning to European leaders who might use the tragedy to advance anti-migrant policies.
Yeah, because that's why they would slow down on the migrants, is because they're anti-migrant, right?
I know.
It doesn't have anything to do with the fact they might be terrorists.
The United Nations to lecture the leaders of Europe, don't you dare go back on your policies just because of this horrible terrorist attack. Why, you know, shame on you, leaders, even thinking that. We know you're thinking it because you've probably been calling us and telling us. But, you know, forget that. These policies are here to stay, and there's not a dang thing you can do about it. That's basically what they're saying to them.
Yeah, and we should definitely go full steam ahead because it's working out so well.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just a bump in the road. It probably will never happen again now that they've got it out of their system.
Yeah, probably not. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, it's really sad because over the period of time that these policies have been in place, and they didn't just start in 2006. They've been working on opening this up since the early or the mid-1970s at least. Sweden now, which is almost more, they're almost out of, the original Swedes are in a minority at this point. Sweden has become the rape and gang rape capital of the world.
Yes.
Oh, Sweden's in big trouble right now. Their policy is in full force, and it is totally backfiring.
Yeah.
See, and at some point, you tip far enough, and you can't.
You can't get it back.
You can't get it back.
You're outnumbered.
You've gone totally off the edge.
Yeah.
We need to
Destabilization is what's going on right now. That's clear. There is a policy to destroy the nation state, and the way to do it is through multicultural society on the road to sustainable development.
Okay, with that, we're going to pick it up
take another really quick break. Yeah, because in this article, I do hope people go to the website and read it, because it says here the plan is to allow third world countries to emit as much carbon dioxide as they wish, because as Edenhofer said, in order to get rich, one has to burn coal, oil, or gas. So let's let the other guys do it. What the heck? Why not?
Yeah.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, if more of them come over here, they won't pollute as much over there.
Yeah, no, it'll be different there.
Oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a ticket.
Someone knocking at the door. Somebody ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door and let him in. Ooh, yeah. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door, I let them in. Yeah.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it all about when you only fools are kind.
God, this is like the UN theme song. This is probably what they play in their little conferences. You see them all drinking wine. It's all about being kind.
And if life belongs only to the strong, Alfie, what will you lend on an old golden rule?
Oh, man. You know, politics has gotten so out of hand, it's basically ruining every song that's ever been written. There's some heinous political overtone to everything. So we're here with Patrick Wood. We're speaking about what it's really all about, actually. It's just like that song there. That's our point. I was just looking at one of the quotes or one of the things from the, I guess it's the book jacket probably. But in the heat of the Great Depression during the 1930s, prominent scientists and engineers proposed a utopian energy-based economic system called technocracy that would be run by those same scientists and engineers instead of elected politicians. And by inference, the rest of us dummies who elected those dummies. So this is back in the 30s. So anybody who thinks this is just an Obama deal or just happened in the last few years, hate to burst your bubble, but it didn't just happen. And that doesn't mean it's not worth fighting, though. Isn't that right, Mr. Wood?
That's right. That's right. A replacement economic system is that's different than socialism. It's different than communism. It's different than Marxism. All of those are predicated on some form of capitalism or, you know, well, couldn't exactly call it free enterprise, but it's still enterprise. But a carbon-based or an energy-based economic system is an otherworldly economic system. People can't relate to it, and understandably so. I feel for them because, you know, you grow up with money in your pockets. You grow up with supply and demand. You grow up having ideas on how to make a better mousetrap or whatever. And all you think, your whole mind is wired towards free enterprise. And when you suggest to somebody, well, this is really going to be an energy-based or, an energy-based or carbon-based economic system. They go, how does that work? You know, what? I can't understand it. It's hard to understand. But what's really happening with this, is just amazing. What's really happening with this, guys, is that these people, these elite people, and I'm talking again about members of the Trilateral Commission in particular, because they're the engine driving this whole thing. But what's happening is that there is a massive heist of the entire planet going on right now. They're stealing the planet. This is so incredulously big, you can't, you know, what? Stealing the planet? You can't steal a planet. Well, that's what they're doing. Because all over the world, they are taking resources where wealth is, that's how wealth is generated. They're taking the land, the oil, the gold, the timber, the agriculture. They're taking the resources of the land and they're putting it into a global trust to be held for the quote unquote global commons. With trustees in place who will tell you and I what we are allowed to take out of the global commons for our personal use. There will be no private property. There will be no measure of freedom that you'll be told from cradle to grave what you're allowed to consume. And if you choose to be a businessman, you'll be told cradle to grave what you're allowed to make and how much resources you can use to make it. And they're in process of stealing the entire planet. Now, listen, if somebody's going to say that's nuts, look at just America. Tell me that the Bureau of Land Management has not been stealing the West for the last 40 years. Somebody stand up and tell me that the BLM and all their other cohorts in federal government, whether it's Fish and Game or Parks Department or whatever, somebody stand up and tell me that these people have not been stealing land from the states and from the people for the last 30 to 40 years. This is what's happening, folks, but it's going on all over the world. It's not just here. It's happening in Europe. It's happening in Asia. It's happening in Africa. It's happening in South America. They're heisting the whole planet, and people don't get it because when land is taken away, oh, there's always noble reasons for it. Well, we need, you know, to preserve this national treasure for future generations. You don't want to cheat your great-grandchildren, do you? Or, well, you know, it's just this is just too much of a resource for people to have their hands on. We need to curtail it or whatever. There's always nice reasons given for why it's a good idea.
Right.
But when you get down to it, when you look at the maps of these things, when you look at the big picture, these people are stealing the entire planet right under our nose, and they're using sustainable development as an excuse to do it. Well, that's my studied opinion.
Well, the last little paragraph in this article that we've been discussing here, it says, this is how the global warming alarmist community thinks. It wants to frighten, intimidate, and then assume command. It needs a crisis to take advantage of, a hobgoblin to menace the people so that they will beg for protection from the imaginary threat. The alarmists' quote-unquote better world is one in which they rule the global welfare state. And pretty much all the quotes in the article before it show that, I mean, words out of their own mouth, that's exactly what they think is going on.
Mm-hmm.
They said it.
Yep.
That's right.
I mean, I hear it all the time in these meetings. I listen to it on this thing with the Klamath Dams. You know, you're gonna take out four dams so that historically the river used to be dry. But by taking out the dams, I sit right there and I listen to these people. They're going to get more water. They're going to take out a hatchery that produces 6 million fish. And by doing that, they're going to get more fish. I mean, there's like mm-hmm. a point where you just – it's kind of like – it's funny because I was there with a couple other guys at one of their little secret meetings. And the three of us, you know, kind of all looked at each other. It's like, okay, don't eat the food and don't drink the water. And we literally didn't. I mean, it's like, how are they making all these people think this stuff is real?
Yeah, I know. It's they lie to them. They spin up the propaganda machine.
Yep.
They fear
that they'll lose what little they have now. They've taken so much from them. They don't want them to take it all, so they bend over and let them, you know, do what they want in hopes that they'll be able to keep what little bit they still have control of. That's also going to go away.
Yeah.
And
well, it's interesting because one of the big complaints during the little secret meetings about the Klamath Dam issue was from the tribes. The tribes are like, hey, there's nothing in this agreement for us because the bureaucrats can't give them land or money. Only Congress can. And they cut Congress out of the loop. But they said, don't. I literally sat there and listened to the solicitor from the Department of the Interior. He said, don't worry about it. You know us. We're going to be fair with you. You believe that? And so they signed the document over on the Yurok Reservation. It had nothing in it to benefit them. Oh, except, you know, all the extra fish they're going to get, right, after they take out the hatch. Yeah, anyway, back to the muddy science. But they held this thing on their reservation as a show of good faith. And these guys all bought it. I mean, I would think history might be somewhat illuminating on the topic of the government versus the tribes. But, hey, hope springs eternal, I guess.
Oh, if they only knew. If they only knew all the history behind us. And you remember that I am a native of Northern California as well, I'm sure. I don't live there now. I chose to leave on my own volition. I'm sorry, but that was before.
See, I'm not a native, and I chose to move here. So who's the dummy here?
Well, I don't know.
That would be me. Okay, that, just,
yeah. But I'll tell you, things might change if the state of Jefferson gets established. But
that's true. Can you say land rush?
Leave, but I was involved in the agricultural industry from my birth, all the way up and just till a few years ago when I left. And so I have a lot of interest in the land. I have a lot of interest in the water because we were rice farmers, and that required water, right? And we took most of our water out of the Sacramento River with riparian rights that have since been stolen from from most of the farmers up there. And so I've always had an interest in the dam issue. And if, at first glance, people would say, this has nothing to do with technocracy. This has nothing to do with sustainable development. It has nothing to do with global warming, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to tell you, just to document it, just to put it on record, I want to tell you that all of this dam removal nonsense originated with Bruce Babbitt when he was the Secretary of the Interior under Bill Clinton. Bruce Babbitt was a member of the Trilateral Commission.
I did not know that. Should have figured that out, though.
This is Trilateral Commission policy. He was the one. Back then, people said, oh, that's just Bruce. Come on. That's just so fantastic. Who's going to do that? You know, that's just too big, right? There's just too much scope here, man. Whatever. But he's the guy. Anybody go back and research it. It's public record, for Pete's sake. Bruce Babbitt was the guy who proposed this whole system of dam demolition. And, you know, there's several articles been written on this in the past, but I'm looking at one article that says, former Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt, a proponent of dam demolition, once observed that, quote, on average, we have constructed one dam every day since the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
What?
Close quote. This guy's insane.
That sounds a little over the top.
I was going to say.
It is over the top.
We'd be tripping over him.
Let's take a quick break.
Mean, if you're including the dams in the rice fields, you know, that the farmers shovel up, you know, and close the gate or something, if that's a dam, okay, well, maybe. But, you know, Babbitt was off the rails with this back then, and nobody stopped him. Nobody challenged him back then because they didn't understand the strategy that the Trilateral Commission was executing in the world, and in the United States too, but in the world. They didn't understand the strategy and why this was important to that strategy. They thought, oh, that's just that's just Bruce Babbitt, man. Come on, we know Bruce Babbitt's disgruntled about everything, right? And they didn't pay attention to it. And now we look back, historically, we look back, and we can connect these dots, and we go, holy crud, this dot is connected over here to this dot. You know, it's like the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone. And all of a sudden, you start to see their strategy emerge. This is what people are missing. They don't see the strategy that's been applied to us. And on one hand, you know, why should they? Look, when you go to the Super Bowl, whoever goes, two teams, you go to the Super Bowl, both coaches come in to the game with a strategy. Do they publish their strategy in the Wall Street Journal? I don't think so. It's the most protected secret thing in the whole world to that team. And you go into the game and the two coaches start duking it out on the field through their players, and they both hold their strategies close to their, you know, so they right. hide their mouth so you can't read their lips.
Okay, let's make it a cliffhanger.
Of course they don't tell the strategy.
Hold on.
Yeah. We've got to take one more quick break before the top of the hour. So, cliffhanger. We'll be right back. No spoiler alert. we'll let everybody hear it for real from Patrick, and we have him for the second hour as well. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, We the People Radio.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Field.
Yeah, we got a lot of those. they're living on other people's taxes. And you know, when there are no more taxpayers, I don't know how they're going to pay for all this. It is perplexing.
Well, that's why they need the federal government, because they'll just step
just
in.
Print
and
more.
Print more and
woo-hoo.
Just come in and help us out.
Exactly. Hey, Patrick, so in our last minute and a half or whatever of this particular hour, the other article of yours that I included for today was the thing about Donald Trump. So we don't have to stop talking about environmentalists, but why don't you give people a sneak preview on where we're going to go next hour at some point?
Well, yeah, I think, yeah, we probably ought to talk politics. I mean, people want to talk about that all the time. And we can talk about Donald Trump and how he is behaving like a technocrat, at least behaving like one.
There he goes right there.
Look at that.
Yeah,
is he flying over your head?
Domination of the whole process.
We could hear a big plane. It was kind of nicely timed.
I know. All of a sudden a plane comes swooping over. It's unbelievable.
It didn't say Trump did it.
That was Donald leaving town.
It was the Donald.
Yeah, they've given up on black helicopters out here in Arizona. Now they send jets, fighter jets.
They've just moved to large planes, huh?
Yeah, really.
Well, good. Let's talk about that.
So is there evidence that he is a technocrat? Just do a little spoiler alert here.
Well, when you talk about technocrat in the sense of rule by expert, yes.
Nice.
When you talk about historic technocracy, probably not. But you know, it's all playing to the same fiddle right now.
All right, let's tie those little ribbons up in the second hour.
Yeah,
and
if you're in Philadelphia, catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You can hear the rest of the show. If you're out here in California, stick with us. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the host, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Oops. Welcome back. You're joining We the People Radio for the second hour with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
We are going to have some fun, although the topic will not be fun. what else is new, huh?
Yeah, put the coffee cup down.
Yeah, what is it? The most fun you can have with blood shooting out of your eyes or your blood pressure going through the roof. I forget what we picked.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a frustrating time, but I guess we still have to be plugged in. We've still got to be engaged and push back where we can. So you can find us here every Sunday from noon to 2 on the West Coast at KCNR Studios. If you join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, you'll find our chat room that's open, and that's kind of fun. If you are on the East Coast, we air from 2 to 3. We just talk faster. Crush the whole show down into an hour.
we sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks.
No, we sound like those disclaimers at the end of the drug commercials. And stuff. Real estate.
That's right.
Products and services. WNJC 1360 back there. And those folks actually pick up the back end of the show online, which is great. So we're always looking for ideas and guests and sponsorship and all that fun stuff. So join us online for all that fun information. We're here today with Patrick Wood. Doing the second half here with him. And if you missed the first half, I hope you go back online and listen, because we talked about some good stuff. His book, Technocracy Rising, you can find online. It is and from him, and we've got all the links on there. You can find it at Amazon and everywhere. It's Mr. Wood, contends that the only logical outcome of technocracy is scientific dictatorship, just in case you weren't sure what technocracy is. As already seen in the dystopian literature such as Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, back from 1932 when all this stuff was being kind of hatched, and 1984 by George Orwell in 1948. Both books look straight into the face of technocracy when it was still in its infancy. So just in case you thought it meant technology and we needed cell phones and whatnot to do it, no, they thought of this a long time before those were ever there. So, Mr. Wood, where would you like to go this hour?
Oh, yeah. I would just like to say, before we really go for it, I would like to say I sent you a link.
I saw that. I was secretly
reading
it. By
a story that was written by Bruce Babbitt himself. It was written in 2012. The title of his article is The Dawn of Dam Removal. And he gives a little history there. So it's a very interesting glimpse into his mind. And that's what we need to do. We need to look under the minds of these people. What are they thinking? You know, what do they come up with these ideas? And in that article, in any case, he gives you a little bit of chronological history and some of the conversation with Bill Clinton and others about dam removal, which was his idea. And just incredible. He ends the article by saying, and there are still 75,000 dams for consideration. There's 75,000 others that they're looking to destroy as well, all over America. Can you imagine? It's just absolutely incredible. And he said, not surprising in the article, that when he first went out to talk about removing a dam, very naively, he just walked right into Washington State and said, "Hey, we want to take this dam out." And he notes in the article that next thing that happened is all hell broke loose. The people just went nuts. And they freaked, you know, and they said, not just no, but heck no, you're not going to touch our river. And it raised such a stink that even Clinton came in and gave him a hard time. What's all this stuff about tearing down dams, Bruce? And so, you know, Bruce Babbitt's the guy. What can I say? This whole stinking thing is a result of an a priori policy from one man who just happened to be a member of the Trilateral Commission. And everything you people are struggling with in Northern California right now, there's lots of people involved now, including the governor of your beloved state.
Yeah,
but
good old
you
Jerry.
You can trace it back to one man, Bruce Babbitt, and I'll tell you what, this guy needs to have a spotlight shown on him for what he is and for what he's done to destroy the fabric of America. This is insanity. I just can't wait to see. I just expect him someday to go after Shasta Dam, too.
Well,
oh, you
got to
carry that one down, too, huh? Okay, that's
they tried
cool.
to go after Hetch Hetchy, and then the people in San Francisco, which is how they get all their water, right? So the people in San Francisco are like, we want
work.
All the dams out except that one. Yeah, that's a good
that
one. That's a good one. We want to keep
there's
that
There's no
one.
Impact from that at all.
Well, it's interesting because it says here on the link, I just posted it online, the link you sent me, it says the Patagonia-sponsored documentary film Damnation chronicles dam removal efforts across the United States as told through impassioned interviews and spirited stories about the people entrenched on both sides of this divisive issue.
Yes.
It presents a dynamic perspective on our nation's attempt to harness the power of water at the expense of nature by examining the history and controversy behind dam removal projects. So if this is a topic that is of interest to you, and if you listen to this program, we're going to force you to love it as a topic or to be interested in it or to get educated because, honestly, the people who live in areas that are going to be affected can't fight this by themselves. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to affect everybody.
Well, sure. It's going to start with these, and then it's just going to roll through. And this really isn't starting small either. I mean, didn't they say this is going to be the largest dam removal project in the history of the country?
History of the world.
Oh, history of the world. Yeah. Even better. Yeah, so let's not go small.
And by the way, if their information is all screwed up and this does create a Superfund site and it's a gigantic disaster with the 21 million cubic yards of sediment that they're just going to flush down the river like magic and it's just going to go to the ocean and just be gone, poof.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get any dirt in a creek by your house because that's a huge pollution problem, but you can run 20 million cubic yards of sediment down a river.
That's not a problem.
No, not a problem at all.
No.
Let me relate this to the big heist that we talked about in the first hour, because you need to see this to understand where he gets his policy from or what's in his mind. I mentioned in the first hour that this was about heisting the resources of the world. These people, the elite that is represented by members of the Trilateral Commission, they're setting up a system where they can take over all the resources of the world and dole them out like, I don't know, poker chips or whatever to those of us out here who have to live in this planet. But here's the object. When you make water scarce, what happens to the remaining water?
Yep.
Yep.
You see, in the federal government, in another pincer, has moved, is moving, actually they already have moved, to take over all water in the United States, on top of the earth and under the earth, and including even rainwater. They've already moved. They've already had a pincer move to take that over. So in order to make that valuable, you have to get rid of the abundance of water. And that's what they're doing. That's what this is all about. It's just like, oh, if you want to make energy valuable, how about kill off coal? How about kill the coal industry? How about kill the oil and gas industry? See, that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They want to kill it. Why do they want to kill it? So they can control what remains. That's
right.
Why.
Yep.
The politics of scarcity.
This is not new. Yep. This is not a new kind of a scheme. You remember the movie Goldfinger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From way back when, one of the original James Bond, maybe that was the original James Bond movie, I don't remember. But Goldfinger was predicated on a plot where Goldfinger was going to break into Fort Knox, and he wasn't going to steal the gold. He was going to, he decided he would detonate a nuclear device within Fort Knox and irradiate the gold so that nobody would touch it for the next 5,000 years. And he would make it radioactive.
I think that was probably real.
And what would happen to all the rest of the gold in the world? That was the plot of the movie, for Pete's sake. It would make him the richest man on the planet for the gold that he held and had been buying outside the system. If he could just irradiate the gold in Fort Knox. So this is what these people are doing. This plot is so thin, guys.
Yeah.
That it just it's not even a good story anymore, you know? You wouldn't even want to make a movie out of this anymore. But
no,
these people are pulling this heist off right in front of us, and these poor people with these dams, like the Klamath River Dam, they don't have a clue what's going on and what the big picture is. They're trying to make water scarce so that the remaining water in the world is under their control and not yours. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just gets your dander up, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I guess, you know, there are a lot of people who think, well, this issue isn't a big one. That this isn't the biggest issue. There was a whole exchange on email that I unfortunately was connected to this past week, back and forth and around and back about what was the biggest issue. And I thought, just got to be kidding me. You know, how do you pick? How could you say this isn't a big issue? Because when you look at what it's connected to, and what the potential fallout is from it, it's huge. Just the cost to undo a disaster like that, four big hydropower dams on one river that doesn't typically have – it doesn't get like the snow melt and the glacier feed that regular rivers do. It comes out of the lava beds up there. The water's warm, starts out warm. And that little bit is going to move all this sediment to the ocean. They've already said it's going to take out the coho salmon, the supposedly endangered. It's not endangered anywhere in the world, especially when you buy them at Costco. But they're endangered on that river. It'll take them out for over 3 years. Well, that's a fish cycle. So they're going to wipe out an endangered species. I mean, these guys are breaking so many laws and rules and, you know, besides the common sense factor, and yet they think they can do it.
Yeah, and I'm unfortunately, as long as people get outraged over the excesses that these people pull, and it does, it just makes you want to scream. But as long as you're screaming at some little minutia, oh, did you see what he did over there? You know, they broke this law. They didn't follow this policy. They didn't do coordination or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, people get all upset. Oh, how dare they do that? That's exactly what they want, folks. They want you to be micro-consumed with these issues so that you will not see them behind the curtain.
Nope.
That's all.
No, you're right.
Hey,
I'll tell you what.
Every time we get calmed down out here, that I don't know when that happened last, but
yeah.
You know, when we the people get calmed down and we start to look around and understand the bigger picture, you know, what's going on, somebody up there miraculously or unexpectedly throws in a big meat bone, right, into the dog pack. Oh, and then the fight is on.
It's true, too. Know?
And away we go, you know. But this has been going on, really, for 40 years. I've seen this happen so many times. Just when people start to get close to the truth, out comes another meat bone.
Yep.
And the fight picks up again, and people go off in a cloud of dust.
Yep. Don't let a crisis go to waste. When we come back, Patrick, we promised we were going to talk about the Donald and how he ties into all this. Yeah. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back talking about scarcity.
Yeah, more scarcity. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
My head was so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Well, you're just darn lucky our give a damn's not busted. All right, so Mr. Wood, What are you finding on Donald Trump anyway?
Yeah. Just one last thing on this water issue.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If it's possible, I want to point out that the 2030 agenda, which was passed late last year, as you know, it kind of put Agenda 21 on steroids.
Right.
The the 2030 agenda target for water. Let me just read a couple of short paragraphs to you. This is paragraph 6.5. By 2030, implement integrated water resources management at all levels, including through transboundary cooperation as appropriate. 6.6. By 2020, protect and restore water-related ecosystems, including mountains, forests, wetlands, rivers, aquifers, and lakes. Next point, dot A. By 2030, expand international cooperation and capacity-building support to developing countries in water and sanitation-related activities and programs, including water harvesting.
Water.
So there you go. I'm done with it.
Wow.
I'm done with it.
Folks, wake up. This is coming at us from all sides, all conceivable angles. The same people that want to kill the coal industry and the oil and gas industry want to kill the water industry as well and take the water away from the people so that they can control what's left. Just that simple. Now on to Mr. Donald Trump. He's going to negotiate a better deal for us. Do you think he's going to go to the Department of Interior and negotiate over dam removal?
Well, considering that the dams, these particular dams are owned by...
I hardly even know what a dam is, having not been too much out of New York. I don't think they have many dams in New York City.
Well, the other thing is they're owned by Warren Buffett. So,
yeah.
What are the odds that they're doing coffee together or something? Yeah, that's kind of a scary.
I know.
And I don't want to cast aspersions, you know, lightly. I don't know. I don't know who he knows or who he hangs with, but still kind of creepy.
It's pretty crazy. Well, there are some people who are writing stories. Not me. I didn't start out writing this, so I don't want people to get mad at me for being a Trump basher. I'm not bashing Trump. I don't like any of them. If I'm going to insult anybody, I'll insult everybody. You know,
You go.
I get everybody mad at me.
I think Kasich's right where he needs to be. He is behind. He hasn't really kicked in his stride yet. But
that's right. He's at 2%, but he's going to kill it later.
Oh, home stretch. He's holding back. He's gonna race to the front.
That guy, he should get some sort of prize for being the most delusional guy on the stump.
Well, he may be, but, you know, people are demanding a technocrat for president right now. And that's what they are just demanding. They don't care whether he's a socialist, a communist, a Republican, a conservative, a Democrat. They don't care what he is. American people want somebody to stop the bleeding. That's what they want. We're as a people, we're hurting so much that they just want somebody to come in and fix it. Just come in and fix it. We don't care what you do. Just fix it, for Pete's sake. So this guy writing for the American Conservative not too long ago, March 28th, I think it was, he writes an article called Trump the Technocrat. Now, knowing where I'm coming from, right, and the kind of research I do, do you think a headline that like that would catch my attention?
Probably not.
I'm sure your computer was screaming out with some sort of program thing you have going on.
I know, there's a little blinking red light all on its own up on my screen.
It's like a, it's like the submarine movies.
Boop, boop, boop.
Dive.
That's right. And, you know, and I don't want to say that that Trump is not wrapped up in technocracy historically, right? He doesn't wear a little lapel pin from the 30s, and he's not necessarily into that side of it, but he's Mr. Fix-It Man. He's the expert that will come in and fix things. And this article very beautifully brought this out. And there's some good precedent examples in recent history on how this was done and how it worked out. And you had in 2010, you had Greece and Italy both in a disaster mode. The Greece was burning, literally. Italy was just about to completely disintegrate. And they didn't know what to do. They couldn't solve their financial issues. Their economies were falling apart. And the EU could not allow that. So the EU, that's unelected people making decisions for everybody, they sent in two technocrats. They called them, the press called them technocrats. Mario Monti went to Italy to be prime minister. They just appointed him prime minister in Italy, of all places. And there's no vote, no election, nothing. Here's your new, let us introduce you to your new prime minister, Mario Monti. What? You know?
That whole electing thing is a big pain
they
anyway.
They said, man, if you can fix it, have at it. That's what they said. That's why they didn't rebel right there in the spot and have a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Monti was a member of the Trilateral Commission.
How long did
they
last?
They sent another guy into Greece. His name was Lucas Papademos. Same thing. Greece didn't squawk. These two countries are the cradle of Western civilization, for Pete's sake. The Greeks, with the same response. We don't care who does it. Fix it. You know, we can't solve it. Anybody come in. So Lucas Papademos came in. He's also a member of the Trilateral Commission. Isn't that a coincidence? What an incredible coincidence. They came in, they were called technocrats by the European press, and they came in and they served their time to rearrange the economic structure of those two countries. And the people didn't particularly like what they did in the end of it, and they left, and they finally elected somebody else to be prime minister in the country. And both countries are still in a mess right now. But the people demanded a technocrat to fix things. And people are looking at Donald Trump for the same thing. He says, let's make America great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Make America great again. Well, how are you going to do that, Donald? Well, I'm going to negotiate better trade deals. That's the first thing I can do. I'm an expert negotiator. And so now here's the expert stuff comes out. He views himself as being, you know, triple, quadruple PhD in making deals. He's a negotiator. Everybody knows that. And he uses that all the time. He says, you know, we suffer from losing all these jobs to China, et cetera, because we've negotiated lousy deals, and I'm going to come in and renegotiate all this thing. Well, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
fix
he
it.
Can do that.
Fix it.
Yeah.
What's your problem? I can fix it. You know, you got, I, you know, you hate, you hate to think of some of the things you might fix, but I think just about any problem you throw at him right now, he said, I can fix that. I can do that. I can do that better than anyone else because I am an expert. See, this is a technocrat mindset. He's not a politician at all.
He never says, I'm going to get together with your representatives and do this constitutionally. It's I'm going to basically wave my magic wand, which kind of sounds like something we're doing right now.
It is.
Sounds like pen and a phone to me.
It sounds a lot like pen and a phone.
I know. And, you know, people like, you know, he kind of brings to mind a guy like Robert McNamara. From back in the 60s and 70s, he's the guy that prosecuted the Vietnam War. He tried to do it according to management theory. And what a failure it was.
Mm-hmm.
What a total failure it was. We ran out with our tail between our legs. Just incredible.
Well, I think Donald Trump came to the party at the exact right time. And said exactly what people want to hear.
Yes.
And people are just done. They're done with the system, and they just want change, and they don't care. Like you said, they don't care how you do it. Just do it.
I know.
And they,
you know,
which is a fairly scary way to.
It is a very scary way. I mean, we are a. I don't know. We have laws. We have a Congress. I mean, we have to go through the process, right or wrong. There is a process that we have to follow, and to get somebody in there that says they can fix it without really worrying about the process, that's a scary deal.
Yeah. This article brings out a very interesting kind of a word picture here. It says, as critics saw it, asked to build structures that would carry human blood from New York to Chicago, your average technocrat would tell you how much such a project would cost and how long it would take to complete it. But they would refrain from asking the very basic question, quote, why the hell do you need to carry human blood from New York to Chicago? You know, this it's like, okay, I'm solving a problem that really doesn't need to be solved here. But a technocrat doesn't make that distinction.
Yeah, that's true. And if people think that, you know, the other part of this, we've seen a lot of, obviously, tons of public process just being completely skipped. And kind of sweats me that this will be just a long term. You guys all just sit there and don't make any noise, kind of like the kids in the backseat of the car. You know, we're up front. We got our feet on the pedals, our hands on the wheel, and we're going to do this for you. So we'll let you know when we get there.
Yes. The last time that America had such a simplistic choice that we have today with Trump and popularity as well was with Jimmy Carter.
Ew.
Now, I was there. I went through that
That's
whole
spooky.
Election cycle. I wasn't a worker, but I was there and I saw it and I read and, you know, whatever. Jimmy Carter, his campaign moniker was, whatever, his marketing tagline, like Donald Trump is Make America Great, right, again?
Yeah.
His marketing tagline was, I will never lie to you. That's what he said.
Wow.
I will never lie to you. And he carried a Bible because he was a peanut farmer from Georgia, a good old Southern Baptist boy. Baptist. You don't call him Baptist. But Baptist. Baptist. I don't mean to bash the Baptist, but that's what, that's what they call them down there in the South. They say Baptist.
Interesting.
So, he put on a front that had been handed to him, carefully constructed by Zbigniew Brzezinski, a member of the Trilateral Commission. Brzezinski knew what it would take to get elected, and he said, this is what you need, this kind of front you need to put on. You need to tell people that you never lie to them, and you need to appear to be a religious guy, so carry a Bible. And quote something from it once in a while. That's what he did. And he came in on a wave of popular support, became president, and I dare say that he not only did he not lie to that he never lied to the American people. That's all he did. I don't think the man knew how to tell the truth. Honestly, he lied every time he got a chance to. Just the opposite of what he said he would do. Okay, that's my point. He did just diametrically opposite of what he said he was going to do, and the American people bought it. They brought him in with a landslide, and after 4 years, they were so sick of him that they would do anything to get rid of him. Of course, that's when Ronald Reagan came in. But I have the same deja vu thinking about right now about Donald Trump, because he's saying, I'll make America great again. Now, what's the opposite of that?
Yeah.
He's lying to us again, maybe he's just impotent or unable to carry out his you know, what he's going to do, but I'm more afraid of the opposite happening than of what he says is going to happen. And if that's the case, if he follows in the footsteps of Jimmy Carter, America may well be finished before it even has a chance to know what happened to it.
Just when Jimmy Carter was going to be the second worst president in history.
I know. I think that's why it could be worse than Jimmy Carter. Then along came...
Obama.
I know.
Well, see, I've always figured that's why Jimmy Carter's beating cancer. I figured he'd have to, just so he could live long enough to be the second worst president.
I know.
On that happy note, need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Patrick Wood. He is the author of a terrific book called Technocracy Rising. Oh, sure. Easy for me to say. And you can find all that information on our website, wethepeopleradio.us. So subtle. That's the election 2016 theme song. Ha.
Yep.
Well, there you go, Patrick. We thought we'd give you some cover.
That's really good. Yeah. I don't want to offend only half the people by talking about Donald Trump.
That's however. Right.
So maybe we should add a word about Ted Cruz.
Go for it.
I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah.
What the heck is this, the deal with these guys? I mean, you know, we've got to just, let's just, we had, what, 17 candidates or something? You're running against a socialist and a criminal, and you're thinking out of 17 people, we got this thing smoked.
And that's right.
No,
yeah,
man.
We got to boil down to two people that nobody likes and can't be elected. Man, do we do a job or what?
Well, hopefully they can. I don't know. It's bad.
You know, the biggest concern I have about Ted Cruz is not his sexual habits or anything like that. You know, the scandal stuff is coming out. That doesn't bother me. Well, it bothers
you're
me.
You're immune.
Who knows if it's true. You know,
you expect
that kind of mud to be thrown around, right?
Sure.
And anybody can accuse anybody of anything. But you remember, I know you remember, because we talked about this one, I think.
No pressure.
We talked about the North American Union.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The North American community. We talked, I think we did, as I remember. That was a long time ago, like 2005, 6.
I'm busy posting all our old shows, so yes, I know we talked about it, because I'm literally posting it right now.
The North American community was something I did a lot of work on to publicize, and I did a lot of writing on it. And there was a study that came out that got that thing started called, it was from the Council on Foreign Relations. It was called Building a North American Community. And it was headed by Robert A. Pastor. That man's dead now, but Robert Pastor was known as the father of the North American community. That was going to merge Canada, Mexico, and the United States into one big happy family. They never suggested how they're going to talk the Canadians into that, or the Mexicans, by the way. they never really brought that up. But that's what they wanted to do, make us one big happy family.